the way it stands right now is we are looking at all the evidence that was collected and seeing what can be tested that will possibly generate some answers for this family.
There are plenty of violent people in this world. There's no question about it. But that's a pretty extreme example of violence directed at one person.
It's been 26 years since Tammy was brutally killed in this incredibly violent way.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to Best Case, Worst Case. This is Jim Clemente, retired FBI profiler, former New York City prosecutor and writer, producer of CBS's Criminal Minds. And with me today is...
Hi, everybody. It's Francie Hakes, former state and federal prosecutor. Jim, I think we should get right back in with our guest, who I know some of our listeners have been waiting impatiently for a week. They tell us that all the time on social media, that they hate it when we have to break a case, especially with a guest as exciting as this, in half. So let's just jump right back in and introduce our fabulous guest. Who are you?
Cheryl McCollum with the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, CSI Atlanta, and a local Metropolitan Atlanta Police Department.
It's great to have you back, Cheryl. And you were just telling us last week about the fact that a passerby noticed this young girl with two individuals, and she seemed to be under some kind of stress. But when they approached, she said everything was okay.
Right.
So take it from there.
And I think you made the best point last week when you said, if you feel like something's wrong, well, this person not only had a gut feeling something was wrong, they acted on it. So that to me tells me clearly she was probably a little more than agitated. Whatever he saw disturbed him enough for him to ride over there and ask her, are you okay?
Well, Jim, I'm so excited that Cheryl has come back to tell us the rest of Tammy's story. This is truly an unsolved, open case that our best case, worst case listeners might actually help solve, either with money or tips or information. Our listeners might be able to help Cheryl and the detectives in Savannah get justice for Tammy. And Cheryl, let's just, for people who might be tuning in have missed last week, let's sort of give a quick recap. I mean, you're with the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute, and you notice that there's a cold case in Savannah from 1994, right? Mm-hmm. And it's a 17-year-old girl who went missing one night out of an apartment where she was living with some friends. Do we know her name? Are we allowed to talk about it on air, or do you want to keep that?
Oh, sure. Her name is Tammy Jackson.
Tammy Jackson. All right. So 17-year-old Tammy has gone out one night to a convenience store just to kind of get a break from the young couple and their baby where she was living. And the next day, her body was found in kind of a very remote, hard to access, unless you're a local, island called Hutchison Island there outside of Savannah, Georgia. You noticed some interesting things when you first started reviewing the case about her death and the cause and manner of death. Can you talk about that a little bit just to get our listeners up to speed?
It leaked off the page because 17 years old, she had been stabbed 130 times, hogtied, strangled, and then run over by a car. And it just blew my mind that, number one, I had never heard about this case. And number two, that everybody wasn't talking about it.
Right.
This is the kind of case that needs the spotlight so bad, because there's somebody, or as Jim said, two people that are out there and they're still behaving this way. So I think all of us should try to do something about that, as well as get justice for Tammy and her family.
I completely agree, Cheryl. So you've got this case. You've reached out to Tammy's sister, which Jim and I love, because we always think that giving the victims a voice is the critical part of the criminal justice system, and especially for people looking at cold cases rather than focusing on the offender, except making sure you catch him or them. So you've reached out to Tammy's sister, mm-hmm. and Tammy's sister says, let's do this, you know, help us, anything you can do. So you reach out to the local Savannah detective.
Tara Smith. And let me tell you something, honey, she is a bulldog. She is, what resource do you have? Tell me everything you think I can do. And she understands Tammy. She was that 17-year-old girl in Savannah. She understands her group of friends. She understands being frustrated, right? And wanting to be grown, but you're not quite grown. So she gets all of it. She also understands how this case went cold. At the time, in 1994, Tammy didn't have a cell phone. None of her friends had a cell phone. There wasn't a cell phone tower on Hutchinson Island. It didn't like that could be tracked. All the blood at the scene was hers that they knew. They could not put her with anyone. They couldn't. The boyfriend was in Columbus. The friends were asleep. Nobody had any motive. She was well-liked. Her high school friends to this day, several of them met me when I went down to Savannah the first time. They want to help. They gave video of birthday parties and, you know, things that they were all at with her laughing and talking. And they were like, this is her. If you want to know her, here's the video. That's her. Her sisters, that sister bond. I mean, I don't know any other way to describe it. She had a twin, of course, that had that connection. But, yeah. You know, both of her sisters love her and, you know, were fighting for her. You know, Stacy, her older sister, is the one that I reached out to and that called me back. And Stacy's like, anything I need to do, anywhere I need to go, let me know. And she has shown up for media hits. She has talked to people. She has done some fundraising with me. Carl Marino, that y'all know from Homicide Hunter, mm-hmm. Carl did a function with me where we raised money so that we could get some things tested. Because I believe that that might be the thing that pushes this thing into the end zone, hopefully. But let me brag on Detective Smith for a minute. And y'all all know this. Y'all all know that sometimes in law enforcement, ego plays a part. And they don't want some housewife from Atlanta calling them, telling them what to do with their case, right?
First of all, I don't think I'd describe you exclusively as a housewife from Atlanta, but okay. I mean, that may be one of your hats, but certainly not the only hat.
Well, my husband would tell you I ain't no kind of housewife at all. So,
I know what I say to that.
Well, that shows how little he knows. Right.
he's loyal.
I promise you, my husband would not describe me as no kind of housewife either. I promise you that. I do bake. So there's the baked goods aspect of things.
But
other than that, I don't cook really. I don't clean. None of it.
Nah. But, you know.
And I don't iron. I just want to put that out there right now. I don't iron his clothes.
But it all works, right? I don't mind ironing, but he's a fabulous cook. So it works out. We're all there. But, you know, the thing, again, for this case, for me, when I talked to Detective Smith, right off the bat, she's like, what can we do? And she would use things like we and us. And, you know, she included the family and me and everything. So I just told her, I said, here's the deal. There's this thing called an MVAT and there's this thing called the Bardot method. And if you've never heard of them, if you would just let me tell you about them, I can get you to the people that invented it. And she was like, I'm there. Well, the next thing I know, she's on the phone with Francine Bardot.
Now, Cheryl, our listeners love hearing about new technology. Jim and I have talked about the MVAC before, but for people who don't know what...
And the MVAC, yes.
Yes, I love Jared Bradley. The MVAT is a machine that looks like a really small steam cleaner, carpet cleaner. And it shoots out this solution. And as it's shooting out the solution, it's sucking it back up simultaneously. And it can extract DNA off of things that the swab just can't do. They've gotten DNA off clothing. They've gotten DNA off a rock. They've gotten DNA off a ladder. I mean, it's just crazy what they've been able to do and the cases they've been able to solve with this machine. So the wonderful thing about the people in the true crime world, to me, Jared Bradley is not untouchable. If I call him, he answers. And if he can't answer, he calls me right back.
And so who he is, Cheryl?
His daddy invented the MVAT. So
and he runs the company.
And he runs the company, and he is giving and kind and brilliant. And, you know, I said, look, if you wouldn't mind, would you talk to Detective Smith in Savannah? He's like, I will go to Savannah, you know. So I hooked them up. Then I called Francine Bardole, who invented the Bardole method. And what she basically invented, for the ladies in the audience and the men too, but there's a way to clean your jewelry and you put it in this little solution and it shakes like crazy. And then your diamond just looks fabulous when you're done. Well, she took that same principle with shell casings and she's like, I'm able to get DNA off a shell casing that's been fired. When in years past, we all believed through that heat and fire, DNA would be damaged and no good. Well, that's not true anymore, thanks to her.
Well, is she Southern? Is any woman who looks at the jewelry cleaning method and takes that to get DNA off shell casings, I feel like she must be Southern woman.
Well, she's in Utah, but the jewelry cleaning is the way I describe it. She describes it real technical about how she busts up the ions, but I don't know how that works. So I'm just telling you.
It's ions.
But the great thing is, so Francine calls her, and Francine's like, yeah, I think Cheryl's right. I think if we can get the right evidence and let me, you know, do my thing, I think we might have some good luck. So for me, again, it's that community. It's that teamwork. It's that willingness. We're going to do the right thing at the right time for the right reason and no other. There's no other reason to do it. Nobody's making any money. Nobody's making a movie. This isn't for any other reason but to say this family deserves to know what happened to their child and the people that did it need to be in prison. Because they're going to hurt other people.
Cheryl, you know, I think this is so interesting that you talk about new technology. So let's talk about CSI for just a minute. Let's talk about crime scene investigations and technologies. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about the evidence in this case and kind of where you and Jim, where you guys think there could be potential evidence that might help solve the case. But before we go there, I want to ask you about CSI generally, because I have to confess. One of the guys in our company was on our production company was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago talking about shows, crime shows that he's sort of been a part of developing. And one of those was CSI, which I think really glorified CSI work in a way that I enjoy any criminal professionals who are getting the attention that they deserve. They're sort of the unsung heroes of casework. And I agree with that. What I don't like is what the show did as a prosecutor to my ability to convince a jury that they have all the evidence that exists. They have all the evidence that's ever going to exist. And no, we did not get DNA or a fingerprint off a crack rock because we literally can't. And so stop demanding fingerprints on crack rocks because we can't do it. And so I have to admit, I hate saying this because I'm in the production business now, but I refuse to support any of the CSIs, not because the show wasn't good or the actors weren't great or the stories weren't interesting, but just because it really made my life harder as a prosecutor. So what do you think about kind of the, I don't really want to call it glorification, negative.
Let me just jump in because there was a show I was watching and this Hummer pulled up and the door opened slow. And this beautiful leg comes out wearing a stiletto. And then when she eases completely out of the car, she's got on a leather miniskirt and some type of little crop top. And then she walks up to the body. And then this really handsome detective walks up. And there's clearly sexual tension between the two of them because they're both just so freaking beautiful. You know, and they kind of flirt for a minute and then they solve the crime, and then they flirt some more.
Francie, isn't that just how we rolled up?
That is exactly how it worked. You know? It's exactly how it worked. Well, it was like
I
a whole
roll
movie.
Up everywhere in a stiletto, yeah. I admit it.
And leather skirts and jackets and stuff.
For your audience to know, that's how it is. I mean, that's my line.
So. Even Josh is laughing at that one.
So anyway, yes, the part that I love is when somebody on TV will have some type of contraption that's not even real.
Yeah.
And they'll use it and they'll say like, oh, here's her blood. Oh, it's Joan Johnson. own Oak Street. What are you talking about?
The contraption. I think the thing that really made me turn into an anti-fan of CSI is one of the early episodes. They did one of those tents with the glue to develop a fingerprint on, you know, something. I don't remember what. And ever after that, juries would ask us about the tenting glue and the fingerprints, which was being done in like two major labs in the country. Certainly not in the district attorney's office in Columbus where I was working, or at Albany where I was working, or even here in Cobb County outside Atlanta where I was working. So it just made the job harder. So I'm just wondering what you thought joining, you know, after the kind of the glorification of CSI. Did you come in with those sort of expectations that these incredible theories and contraptions were real?
No. I mean, I've been in the business a long, long time, so I kind of knew the deal. However, there are some things we have now that are pretty remarkable. Phenotyping, for one. I mean, who saw that coming? I mean, that's remarkable, right?
Want to explain to people what that is?
Sure. So they take, you know, your blood, and they take the phenotypes and they put them in a computer, and that computer generates a composite of what you look like. So from your blood, they're able to tell you have blue eyes and freckles and blonde hair and a cleft in your chin.
Wow.
Good Lord.
That tells you certain factors that your DNA would produce. And they can't tell you exactly, but they can build sort of a composite now based on that, which is a pretty amazing thing. And soon in the future, there'll be no need for, you know, police sketches, because they'll be able to do that, you know, based on a single skin cell found at the scene or something.
Well, and the thing that always scares me about that for my fellow prosecutors, many of whom who are still working and listen to this podcast, and I will tell prospective jurors who also listen to this podcast, just because something like that exists right now doesn't mean it exists everywhere or is accessible everywhere, or you'll be able to use it in every case. I mean, I think that's raising the expectations of juries is my biggest objection to some of these sort of technological shows. But I want to get back, Cheryl, because it's important to me. I want to get back to Tammy. Mm-hmm. And I want you to tell us as much more about this case as you can and where it stands now and what we can all do.
Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
J'aime le chocolat. In case you don't speak French, that means I love chocolate. And I just learned it from Babbel, the number one selling language learning app. One of my goals for this year was to learn a new language, and Babbel has made that whole process addictively fun and easy with bite-sized lessons that you'll actually use in the real world. I wanted to learn French because when I go back to France, I want to make sure I can order all my favorite things in restaurants and find my way around Paris without anyone wondering what country I'm from. They'll think I'm from France. Babbel's 15-minute lessons make it the perfect way to learn a new language on the go. I use Babbel when I'm outside exercising. And unlike the infamous language classes that we all took in high school, Babbel designs their courses with practical, real-world conversations in mind. These are things that you'll use in everyday life. With Babbel, you can choose from 14 different languages, including Spanish, French, Italian, and German. Plus, Babbel's speech recognition technology helps you to improve your pronunciation and your accent. Right now, when you purchase a 3-month Babbel subscription, you'll get an additional 3 months for free. That's 6 months for the price of 3. Just go to Babbel.com and use promo code BESTCASE. That's BABBEL.com, code BESTCASE, for an extra 3 months free. Babbel. language for life.
For me, at a crime scene, everything matters. Everything's important. So I think it's important that it was a Tuesday night. That's going to, you know, reduce your suspect pool. I think it's important, to remind people there were no cell phones available to her. This was so remote that people that are native to Savannah either didn't know about the island and certainly didn't know how to get there. So again, your suspect pool gets a little bit smaller. I mean, you're talking about 26 years and a lot of things have happened. The island is built up now. Anybody that's been to Savannah, if you look right across the street from River Street, there's the casino and some other buildings. That's near where we're talking about this happened. The way it stands right now is we are looking at all the evidence that was collected and properly bagged and tagged and maintained and seeing what can be done forensically now, what can be tested that will possibly generate some answers for this family.
And
that's where we are. So, you know, again, Jim, I would love to hear from you, but for me, the thing that I wanted to see done quickly is the way she was hogtied. Now, most people, when they tie something, they grab the rope and they slide their hands across it before they start doing knots or anything, right? Whoever did this to her brought the rope with them.
Right.
They brought the murder weapon with them. They brought any element that they used to kill her and get away with them on that island. And they, even if they weren't bleeding, I don't think skin cells would ever dawn on them. So the way they would pull that nylon rope and tie it in a knot, the fact that she was found so fast, there was no bad weather, you know, no water, no, you know, river water, no flooding, no nothing.
So knots a lot of times will contain DNA of the person who tied the ropes.
And that's what I'm hoping will happen. I'm hoping if Francine can get those knots and undo them, that she can actually extract some DNA is what I'm hoping.
Well, and Jim, what I'd like to know from you is about today. So as Cheryl tells us, it's been 26 years since Tammy was brutally killed in this incredibly violent way by one or maybe more than one offender. So what would you expect of someone with that level of rage, that level of violence, the willingness to kill someone like that and who got away with it? What would you expect their life to have looked like for the last 26 years?
Well, I think you can't put it all in one bucket. I mean, I believe that immediately after that, this person or these persons would have basically run and hid. They would have changed their behavior dramatically. People that they lived with or worked with would have noticed a dramatic change in their behavior. They would have been nervous. They might have made an excuse to get out of town for a while till everything calmed down. It's the kind of thing where, to me, this appears to be an impulsive crime that happened that wasn't incredibly well planned. They didn't think about it, but I think there may have been drugs or alcohol that lowered inhibitions and increased the amount of violence that we see. So I would think that they would increase their use of those things. They might have engaged in a bunch of other sort of violent acts separately, but they may have gone their separate ways. I don't think that this is the kind of thing that indicates that it was a serial offender, because if that were the case, you'd see a number of other similar circumstances. If this were a serial killer or a serial killing team, I think you would have seen around that time and maybe even up and down the East Coast or across the South, other events just like this. And I'm not aware of any. And I'm sure if Cheryl was, she would also mention it now. So I think we have somebody or one or two people at least who have changed their circumstances dramatically after this event. And they have, you know, they may have left their jobs or the community they were living in or the relationship they were in and taken off for another part of the country.
Well, so Cheryl, what can we do now? You know, what information is out there that'll help our listeners and the citizen sleuths, so to speak, help you help the police?
Well, I think you're doing it. Me just listening to Jim, I feel like it was two people. The family's not sure. There's one person they kind of are maybe concentrating on and have a good reason to because of his past actions toward Tammy, for lack of a better word. But I want your listeners to also understand, even if they visited Savannah, they may think it's this large metropolitan place, but I want to kind of put in perspective how small town Savannah really is. When Tammy was found at 7 o'clock in the morning, she had no purse or wallet or anything with her. She was wearing a high school ring, but her mama's. When the officer got back to the station, he said, yep, she was wearing this ring. A lady that worked for the police department said, I know that high school. Can I see it? And inside the ring was her mama's name. She said, I go to church with her. Let me call my pastor and the pastor will go over and tell them that he has found this ring and or the police have found this ring and that, you know, they need to contact law enforcement. So that's how small town this is. Mm. There was one case that occurred in Florida after Tammy's murder, where a young girl and her brother were murdered in a campground. She was left in a similar manner as Tammy and also stabbed. And two people were arrested for that. So I just would like to see them excluded.
By that, you mean test their DNA against any DNA found at the scene or the implements that were left?
Correct. Correct.
Yeah, well, that would be a really good thing to do. And there are plenty of, you know, violent people in this world. There's no question about it. But that's a pretty extreme example of violence directed and rage directed at one person. But the multiple methods tell me, you know, that it's a high likelihood that there's more than one.
Yeah, any one of those things would have killed her.
Of course.
Yeah. You don't got to stab somebody 130 times. Three or four will do it. You don't have to run over somebody two or three times. You don't have to hog tie them and strangle them. I mean, it's
terrible.
And that took a lot of time. That's not as fast as people think it might be. You know,
and that's what's so horrifying about it. I mean, it's just her last moments were obviously terrible. And I really hope that we can help you in some way bring justice for Tammy. And so is there, can our listeners donate? Is there a GoFundMe, anything to help with scientific testing, those sort of expenses? Is there anything that our people can do?
Sure. If anybody wants to donate and just put on there, this is for Tammy Jackson, every dime is going to go to that forensic testing for her. And here's the other thing, you're doing it. One of the things I first told her sister, Stacy, is we've got to get this story out there so that people, number one, are aware of it, because again, the killer may still be at large. And the second thing is for people to get angry enough to say, look, give this detective whatever she needs, time or money or technology, so that she can solve this thing, instead of just saying, well, it's one of however many cold cases. This one is different.
It is different.
Yeah.
Give us the relevant dates again that it happened. Mm-hmm. So that anybody who might have been in the area then, they may have information that they don't even know they have.
That's right.
But understanding where it happened and when it happened might trigger a memory for them. And then tell us again where they can send a potential donation.
Okay. January 26, 1994, in that area. So it could have been the 23rd. Somebody approached you. It could have been afterwards. And like Jim said, they could have gone to Florida. One of the gentlemen had some ties to Macon, Georgia. So like he said, up and down the East Coast, maybe. I don't think they had a lot of money. I think they did a lot of robbing and burglary so they could go to their next place. They went to a campground because I don't think they had enough money for a hotel. Tammy certainly didn't have any money.
Well, and so what about the cable man who saw two men mm-hmm. with Tammy that night? Is there any description of them or their car?
He said he didn't really get a look at them. He does know there were two in the car. I mean, it's one of those, he was really focused on Tammy, which is good because, again, when her face was on the news, he said, that's her. That's definitely her. And where she would have walked to the store, that was the right store. So we're pretty confident he knows what he's talking about.
We'll put our photograph up. We'll put up any other information on our Facebook page. And where can they send a donation, Cheryl, to help with
they
technology?
Can reach out to me on Facebook or Twitter or Instagram, or they can send it to my attention, Cheryl McCollum, at 700 Doug Davis Drive in Hapeville, 30354.
And spell Hapeville for those people who are outside of Hapeville.
Hapeville.
Hapeville, Georgia? Mm-hmm. Okay.
That's it. Hapeville, Georgia. Okay. All right. Well, Cheryl, I mean, this has been incredible. The work you're doing is incredible. I really just have one last question. I'm really intrigued by your passion for this. And just looking at something on a social media post has led you to, you know, to advocate for Tammy the way you've advocated for many other victims in cold cases. Your mom obviously instilled in you some kind of a passion for crime, but how do you explain your determination to find justice for these victims in these cases that are unsolved?
Well, I think you being a prosecutor and Jim being an FBI agent, I think y'all know it, you can't not do it. So to me, you read that one description, and I have a 17-year-old daughter in my house right now. I don't know how you would read it and scroll past it when you have the people that I have access to. So again, it's not me. It's me making a phone call to her sister and then calling Francine and Jared saying, hey, y'all all need to get together with Tara Smith and get this thing handled. And then Carl Marino saying, what can I do? And I say, hey, I think we've got a really fun event. Why don't you and your beautiful bride come down to Atlanta and we do a fun Valentine's Day thing, and people will come to meet you, and, you know, we'll have a wine and crime and it'll be great. And I mean, it's a phone call. I don't know how you don't get off your butt and make one phone call.
Maybe you could do a GoFundMe or something else, start that so that it's more visible and more organized and people can just click and donate, even if it's a tiny amount. We have thousands of listeners, tens of thousands of listeners all across the country and around the world that might be able to help.
I think that would be great. Like,
and I think helping your institute could also help lots of cases, including Tammy's.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Let me tell you about her sister. Her sister is so phenomenal. She says, look, if we raise $5,000, but only need two, you take that other three and help somebody else. I mean, that's the kind of people, you know, so people say, well, how do you not get burnt out? How the hell do you get burnt out working with heroes every day and working with families like that, that have lost something so incredible, but are still willing to go help somebody else, even if they don't get their answer?
Right. That's the crime community. I mean, it's an incredible thing.
Yeah.
So tell us, Cheryl, tell us where they can find you on Facebook, what your handle is on Twitter, and what is your website?
The website is coldcasecrimes.org, and you can find me at Cheryl McCollum or the Cold Case Investigative Research Institute or coldcase_institute on Instagram. You can find me. I'm not hard to find. Trust me.
We'll put all these links and handles on our site. And
I'll tell you one more thing we have so your listeners know. And this is also a fundraiser if they're interested. So whether it's Crime Con or whatever, I do those things called Wine and Crime where I actually bring the murder box and y'all help me work it through. I also have wine. And then if you get bottles, the victim is on the front and their case is depicted on the back. So what I encourage people to do is get a bottle of wine and have a dinner party and talk about Tammy or Melissa Wolfenberger or Nicole Smith or whoever, whatever bottle you get, and try to help us solve the case.
Cheryl, you're doing amazing work.
Well, Jim, I appreciate it. But like I said, I'm huge fans of y'all. And
we're huge fans of you. We hope you come back again. And not only to, you know, tell us about other cases, but I want you to come back again. Francie and I would love if you came back when you actually solved this case and give Tammy some justice.
Yes.
Right on. I'll do it.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much, Cheryl, for being here. And we really hope that our listeners will reach out and help Cheryl do what she's doing and help to bring some justice for Tammy and for the other victims whose cases haven't been solved yet. Until next time, thank you for listening to Best Case, Worst Case, signing off.
Best Case Worst Case is an XG production, produced by Francie Hakes, Josh Murphy, and Jim Clementi at Empire Studios LA. Engineered and edited by Matt Gergel. Music composed and performed by Simba Sumba and hosted by Wonder.
You can listen to Best Case Worst Case on your favorite listening app. We are on Spotify, Stitcher, Apple Podcasts, and wherever you listen to podcasts.
If you want to do something about child sexual abuse, Darkness Delight can help. Did you know that more than 90% of the time children are sexually abused by someone they know?
Jim, this isn't about stranger danger. It's about learning the true risks. Darkness to Light's training can help prevent, recognize, and react to child sexual abuse in your community.
When you make the decision to get involved, kids can be protected. It starts with you.
Visit www.d2l.org to take the training and learn more.
That's D2L.org.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig, inspiring kid confidence.